Ground Cover News is a nonprofit street paper that was founded in April 2010 as a means to empower low-income persons to make the transitions from homeless to housed and from jobless to employed. Vendors purchase each copy of the Ground Cover News regular edition at our office for 50 cents. This money goes towards production costs. Vendors work selling the paper on the street for $2, keeping all income and tips from each sale. This audio production was made possible by the Ann Arbor District Library, recorded at Fifth Avenue Studios. If you consistently enjoy Ground Cover Speaks, continuing to buy physical newspapers from Ground Cover vendors ensures that we can sustain production. The physical paper and in-person interaction is at the heart of our work. You can find the link to our next audio recording in the upcoming print issue of Ground Cover News. Thanks for listening.
Special thanks to our print advertisers, the People's Food Co-op, St. Francis of Assisi Parish, First Baptist Church, Bethlehem United Church of Christ, the Office of Community and Economic Development, Cineholic, Art on a Journey, Ann Arbor for Public Power, Four Directions, and the Ypsilanti Food Co-op.
Es lo mismo. Vivo en Estados Unidos por 44 años. Soy un refugiado cubano que me dieron la libertad con más de 125 mil personas en 1980. De esos 125 mil cubanos que vinimos en el Mariel, todos fuimos libres por el presidente Fidel Castro Ruz y el presidente de United States of America, Jimmy Carter. Entonces, es lo único que tenemos. No tenemos nada. La policía sigue trabajando con la inmigración sigue deportando personas. Es un perjuicio de la vida. Si usted no es nacido en Estados Unidos, usted pierde todos sus derechos. No importa si viene de Europa, de África, de Asia, de Centroamérica, de México, de Sudamérica, no importa. A la inmigración no le importa nada. Ellos siguen trabajando como personas estúpidas. Por eso tengo ahí un fascista. Es lo mismo que tenemos. No tenemos nada derecho, no tenemos nada. Todos los días ponen en la Constitución de América, ahí en, no sé si en la Casa Blanca o en el, ¿cómo se llama ya? Casa Blanca o Capitolio, lo que sea. Todo este país ya como que usted no sabe nada de la vida. Siempre seguimos trabajando, siempre seguimos en lo mismo. Un fascismo en este país, lo que hay. Es todo.
So long, Joe. In this time of political turmoil, it is refreshing to see that there are still people around who will put their personal wants aside and will do what's best for the people. Yeah, remember us? Now, with his example and heartfelt decision, we have a true patriot who showed us he didn't just talk the talk, but walk the walk. Now it is time for us to come together. We have a moment in time where we can change the narrative, where we can run political campaigns on our own accomplishments, not on our opponent's failures. It is time for us to take a quick breath and take a good look at both candidates, not have them just attack one another. A time to find out who has the integrity to have the light shine on them and not come up wanting. So we are saying goodbye to a person who has spent most of his adult life serving the people, Joe Biden. It would be easy to take pot shots at both parties. I'll follow the President of the United States, Joe Biden's lead, and see if this novel idea of doing what's best for the people resonates and catches on.
Black Men Vote mobilizes voters in barbershops, written by Mike Jones, Vendor 113. I remember the first time I voted and became a part of the democratic process. But why? Black men here in the United States of America, a lot of us feel our vote doesn't matter or won't have a real effect on our situation here in America. In short, we are totally detached and have no faith in the democratic process. But it is projected that there will be 34.4 million eligible black voters by election time in November 2024. Black voters' turnout rates are projected to be higher than Hispanic and Asians. The first time I voted was when Barack Obama first won the presidency in 2008. The reason I voted for him was simply because of his skin color, not because he was a Democrat or his ideas and value were in line with my own. I never thought about what type of policies he might administer. How naive I was then. Now, 17 years later, I'm much wiser. Still, I have to mention, his skin color caught my attention and put me in the game of the democratic process. During Barack Obama's presidency, I started becoming detached and decided not to participate in the 2012 election. Then Trump came along in the 2016 and swept the nation by storm, catching everybody's attention. He turned ordinary news stations into political entertainment narcotics. People became hooked to Trump news. Now I must mention that Trump news got me back into the game of the process of democracy again. Both Obama and Trump caught the attention of the masses, including those people who would have never paid attention to the politics. Sometimes it takes extreme figures and/or situations to get people's attention and to get them involved. Ever since 2016, I've been back in the game, being a part of the democratic process, even though I struggle with it at times. This upcoming election, I will cast my vote, and I hope others will do the same. I met a brother in the downtown Ann Arbor area named Todd Wilson, the Michigan lead organizer and consultant of Black Men Vote. As we talked, he let me know that Frank White, known as former President Barack Obama's top fundraiser, started Black Men Vote in January 2024. Black Men Vote is currently partnership with Shop Talk, the flagship of the campaign currently operating in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. The goal is to get 55 to 60 barbershops, beauty salons, barber schools involved in helping get black men registered and participating in the democratic process. As he continued, he informed me why he decided to get involved and engaged in black men voter mobilization and voter registration, because he noticed a voter deficit. If we look at the polls, our voter turnout rate was the lowest nationally, only at 12%. Of the black registered voters came out to vote in the last Michigan primary election. Shop Talk is geared towards changing that trajectory by mobilizing black men to get them engaged or re-engaged into the democratic process. As men, we are looked up to in the household and in the community. People watch us, therefore, we can lead by example and we can change the trajectory when it comes to our vote as a whole in our community. Black men being involved allows black men to be more involved on issues and allow us as black men to have a voice in the political arena on issues that matter to us. Then I ask him about the type of response that he's been received since the start of Black Men Vote. And he said, voter mobilization, people are really getting behind it and getting involved. We also look to partner with various organizations and with state and local government soon. Things have been going well. I had one last question for Todd. How can people register to vote and get involved with Black Men Vote? He said, if you want to get more information on Black Men Vote, you can go to our website, blackmenvote.org, and you can register to vote on the website and also get valuable information needed for the upcoming election. So there you have it, folks. Exercise your right and vote.
Where is the Revolution by Ken Parks, Ground Cover Vendor 490. It is often said you can kill the revolutionary, but you can't kill the revolution. On the 4th of July, independence is tainted with a military flavor that usually promotes the military-industrial-financial complex that Eisenhower warned us about. Freedom of expression is limited by the idolatry of flag worship. Fireworks are a magical display that distracts from the bombs that are regularly falling on someone in the world. This aspiration for freedom is born with the first breath of every baby. The potential for love and creativity, which we recognize in a newborn, is the human heritage we all embody. The real question may be, where is your inner child? NASA, National Aeronautics and Space Administration, did a study on genius, creativity, and imagination, and discovered that nearly all five-year-olds scored high. The rate declined with age and was down to 2% for adults. Google can teach us a lot, but it's up to us to work with what we have. This means recognizing that the plight of our inner child and doing the healing so that inner child and adult learn to communicate. I proposed a workshop at Crazy Wisdom with Joy DeCruz on this theme and hope to have an announcement soon. Joy was mentored by Eugene Genlin, who wrote Focusing, an important book on mental health. Facing reality is a revolutionary act and can inspire you to become an active participant in your life. The dialectic of theory and practice is a lively one as the rhythm of joy appears. Today, July 1st, is the anniversary of the jazz standard Take Five, the 5-4 rhythm that brightens our life. Search that when you are ready for a treat. Maybe we will play it on October 8th as the theme of my 82nd birthday. I was born just before the baby boomers, who once said, "Don't trust anyone over 30. There is some form of youth rebellion with every generation, and the Gray Panthers' slogan, "Youth and Age Together," is one to remember. We can empower each other to follow through until the job is done. We will know when peace and justice replace compliance with the chain of command. Martha Reeves and the Vandellas sang about it, "Dancing in the Street," another treat at your fingertips. We have a long history of victories that seem to crumble just as we want to rest on our laurels. After the war in Vietnam, the ruling class broke the so-called Vietnam syndrome with war in Grenada and then in Panama. The School of the Americas became known as the School of the Assassins and renamed itself to continue the wars of counterinsurgency. Read SOAW.org for updates as the popular struggle continues in Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador in particular. The most recent victory in the global struggle for freedom is the release of Julian Assange. The popular movement in Australia gained enough momentum that politicians took notice and acted to release him after 5 years of prison, which came on the heels of his controversial arrest at the Ecuadorian embassy in London, where he was in asylum for 7 years. The bravery and persistence of Assange and his family and the struggle for freedom of the press is now legendary. Let's follow through and support to whistleblowers in our midst. Water protectors from Standing Rock in North Dakota to the Carrizo Comecrudo tribe of Texas, the original people of the Rio Grande, are active in exposing the extractive war on the environment. As Juan B. Mancia says, water is meant to unite, not divide. I ordered a t-shirt with a striking photo of him and that quote. You can get one at the Carrizo Comecrudo Tribe of Texas website. I am guilty of being active in both religion and politics, the two taboos of bourgeois culture. This French origin word refers to the capitalist class and sometimes middle class as people adjust to the geopolitical order of our time and history. The French and American revolutions consolidated the end of feudalism and the deepening of the capitalist revolution, which is ripening for the next step towards freedom. This is the responsibility we share as we learn that reality is a seamless whole, that awareness is the next step in the evolution to revolution, to genuine revolution. James Boggs and Grace Lee Boggs are legendary in Detroit and beyond for their life of theory and practice that you can visit in the book Evolution and Revolution in the 20th Century. When your life purpose becomes a shared purpose with others, the power that arises is formidable. If your intention is to benefit all beings without exception, countless world systems will arise. When inner space and outer space come together, infinity takes a dive into the clear light of the void. This is the moment when when masters of mindful awareness will be welcomed into your inner circle of significant beings. Suffering becomes a force to seek the cure. When we discover that reality is a workable situation, the revolution of unconditional love will erase all the conceptual prisons that have enslaved us from beginningless time. Unimpeded awareness becomes a victory celebration. Imagine that. I must mention that July 26th is celebrated in Cuba as the beginning of the Cuban Revolution. Although the attack on the Moncada barracks was a failure, it marked the beginning of open resistance to the Bautista dictatorship. I regularly ask my Cuban family, where is the revolution? And the response is always, where is it? We have unfinished revolutions in many places. Awareness with dignity and confidence will help us weave many local fabrics into a beautiful global quilt. The Invention of Wings is a wonderful book on quilts and freedom. The historic friendship of a slave master's daughter and a slave girl is the inspiration for this book by Susan Monk Kidd, who many know from The Secret Life of Bees. The world is an amazing place when your curiosity comes out of the closet. The revolution begins here. Since no one can do everything, it's good to tune in to whatever speaks to you and know that anything you do is interrelated and that everyday life is the main stage. Daily mindful awareness practice is my recommendation on where to start. Your inner child is ready to play the game of life. Just as the sun rises every day, raise yourself to a daily practice of engaged living. The revolution lives in your heart.
Ladies and gentlemen, the title of the story is Poet Phyllis Wheatley, and the subtitle is A Pioneer of Black Literary Excellence by Will Shakespeare. In the preamble, there's a quote. It says, kidnapped from her West African home in 1762 and sold later into slavery, Phyllis Wheatley grew up to become the first popular African American poet. She was also the first African American and the first slave to publish a book of poems. This quote comes from Britannica Keats' website. The story of Phyllis Wheatley is one which appeals to both the younger and the older generation. She was a trailblazer. When we talk about all the black literary achievements, her contributions and her excellence loom large. This is our fourth and last article about all the black writers and poets of America. The author plans to encourage more discussion and dialogues on this topic at some bookstores and coffee houses in Ann Arbor and Ypsilanti. Stay tuned for some announcements and community invitations. Now, the subheading, Biography of Phyllis Wheatley. Historians do not have the exact birthday for Phyllis Wheatley. Many have suggested that she was 7 or 8 when she was abducted and sold into slavery in 1761. She was a young girl when the slave ship brought her to the shores of Boston. A wealthy tailor, John Wheatley, purchased the little girl to be a servant to his wife, Susanna. Soon, Susanna and John noticed Phyllis had reading and writing abilities. Susanna and her young daughter, Mary, started to teach young Phyllis English, grammar, religion, Greek, Latin, and English literature. Within 2 years, Phyllis could read and write clearly in English. She also demonstrated proficiency in Latin. She mastered the styles and techniques of popular poets by the time she turned 14. A Britannica Kid online article said that as a teenager of 14, Phyllis had a poem published in the Newport Mercury newspaper of Rhode Island. Later, other poems by Phyllis appeared in Boston publications. Phyllis' poems were influenced by the works of poets John Milton, Thomas Gray, and Alexander Pope. Britannica Case observed that in 1770, her An Elegiac poem on the death of celebrated divine George Whitefield was published first in a locally produced pamphlet and then in newspapers throughout British America and England. Britannica Case continued. The poem's wide distribution brought her recognition as the extraordinary poetic genius of New England. Selina Hastings, Countess of Huntington, and a friend of Whitefield, invited the young poet to England and sought a publisher for her works. According to poets.org, Phyllis traveled to London, England in 1771, accompanied by Nathaniel Whitley, son of John and Susanna Whitley. She had put together a collection of her poems into a book titled Poems on Various Subjects, Religious and Morals. In London, she was well received. The book of 39 poems was published in London and dedicated to Countess Selina Hastings. While in London, she met with some dignitaries, including William Legge, 2nd Earl of Dartmouth. The abolitionist Granville Sharp and Benjamin Franklin. She was unable to meet the Countess who invited her to England because when Susanna became ill in 1773, Phyllis hurried back to Boston to help her recover. Poets.org noted in 1776, Whitley wrote a letter and a poem in support of George Washington, who replied with an invitation to visit him. Phyllis was freed from slavery before Susanna's death in 1774. After John Whitley died, Phyllis tried to support herself as a seamstress and a poet. Phyllis married a free black man known as John Peters in 1778. He was a grocer and a lawyer. The couple had three children. Mr. Peters abandoned Phyllis and her children. To provide for her case, Phyllis became a maid in a boarding house. Two of her children died while she experienced poverty. Britannica Case noted, On December 5, 1784, Whitley and her third child died within hours of each other. They were buried together in an unmarked grave. A very sad tragedy. Historians tell us that Phyllis continued to write poems until her last day on earth. However, she was unable to find publishers for her books or poems. About 50 years after her death, in 1834, Memoirs of Phyllis Whitley was published. Another book titled Letters of Phyllis Whitley, the Negro Slave of Boston, was published in 1864. Britannica Case noted that abolitionists referred to Phyllis Whitley's writing as a refutation of society's disdain in the 18th and 19th centuries that African Americans were intellectually inferior to whites. Many legacies. This is part of the conclusion. Whitley left an impressive legacy of brave and thoughtful African-American women writers. It took several decades in the 1800s before Frances Ellen Watkins Harper became the first African-American woman to publish a short story. Harper was both an abolitionist and a suffragette. Other black women writers and women's rights activists displayed their talents in the 19th, 20th, and 21st centuries. Women writers who were inspired by Whitley's sense of empowerment and excellence include Ida B. Wells, Mary Church Terrell, Alice Dunbar Nelson, Zora Neale Hurston, Shirley Graham Du Bois, Lorraine Hansberry, Toni Morrison, Audre Lorde, Angela Davis, Maya Angelou, Amanda Gorman, Nicole Hannah-Jones, and Isabella Wilkinson, come on, to mention a few. Harvard scholar and historian Henry Louis Gates paid tribute to Phyllis Whitley in his recent books, The Black Box and The Trial of Phyllis Whitley. In the latter book, Dr. Gates said, in 1773, the slave Phyllis Whitley literally wrote her way to freedom. The first person of African descent to publish a book of poems in English. She was emancipated by her owners in recognition of her literary achievement. For a time, Whitley was the most famous black person in the West. But Thomas Jefferson, unlike his contemporaries, Ben Franklin and George Washington, refused to acknowledge her gift as a writer. a repudiation that eventually inspired generations of black writers to build an extraordinary body of literature in their effort to prove him wrong. Thank you.
I like the poetry of the poor often the most. This is because the poor, perhaps because having the most need to speak truth, seem to speak truths the most, while more well-heeled poets, as if wanting to be as high and enigmatic as the gods, seem often interested in speaking in ways full of mind powers and mazes, struggling to tower more than to speak.
Intent Cares, a poem, Bookworm. The values we share are there, must mean something to care. The relative, Intent Cares, a poem, Bookworm. The values we share are there, must mean something to care. The relative, the states we make ourselves to be demonstrating behaviors and assertion to attain with how we value. With our value, one values to just pen this in the space allotted we may become as we are with how we are. And a major phase of changing seems to allow meaningful experiential transactions of exchange of self with the other, the referencing the values we're embodying, the vantage. And this happens with our values. This is A Way, another poem, Bookworm. True to how we sense the self, the same old, same old, same old, day in and day out. Still we seek to change with self for what it's worth and all that works out for all we could achieve. These themes still remembering the same self-purpose has been writing the place, these dreams on their own ways just to return with self again.